Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and with me once again this week, the old chum, see, to my crash test dummy, it's Dan. Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Good. I like you referring to me as chum of the sea, because I'm sure I could see you throwing me out of the boat in Jaws, probably.
Yes, I was going for a whole bunch of multiple meanings there. Everything from chum in Jaws to Batman referring to Robin as his old chum. And then just trying to get the C in there. Did I mean S-E-A? Did I mean S-E-E? Was it just to do a really lame rhyme with Crash Test Dummy? Whatever. Which was referring to me and my recent life misadventures, which I probably should just get out of the way right now. Some of our listeners are aware of this already because they follow me on Facebook, I guess, or they're actual friends of mine. But just to inform them further, and those who don't know, yeah, I had a little accident this week, a bicycling accident Wednesday night, which resulted in me, initially the horror of it was my head smashing against the street. And I kid you not, and I exaggerate not when I say one of the last things I remember before a few seconds of nothingness was both the feeling and the sound of my head hitting the street. Mind you, I bought my first bicycle helmet just a week and a half earlier and was not wearing it. So wear your bicycle helmet, don't be Scott. However, after everything and a trip, an all-nighter in the ER, my head is fine. They found what they could in there, you know. But as far as CAT scans and whatever, did not get a concussion or anything of that, you know, just a gigantic hematoma and stuff. And I am badly bruised in various areas. The left shoulder, which you guys last heard me hurt in a sneeze a couple weeks ago. Oh my God, it's worse. Also turns out I have tendonitis in that arm, which is probably why it had been bothering me. But the big problem is I have not one, not two, but three fractured ribs. And I'm going to tell you right now, the next time you're watching a movie or a TV show or reading a comic and there's a character like, say, a Batman or something like that, and the whole thing is that they're wrapping up their chest because, you know, they have, you know, multiple cracked ribs and they're continuing to do whatever they're doing, I'm going to tell you right now, that's total bullshit. Not possible. So, you know, it just, because you cannot even get up from lying down without severe pain. It takes me at least 10 to 15 minutes to get up if I'm lying down. Certain other things, anything that requires any exertion whatsoever is a problem.
Yeah, well, if you had Alfred to give you, like, sweet-ass massages or something, maybe you could manage it. So that's probably the difference.
No. Well, first of all, the massage would only be pain. And second of all, you couldn't move. And, you know, I don't know how Batman deals with the bathroom, but guess what I'm pretty much unable to do, and which is just every day is a ticking time bomb for me right now. You know, and little things like, you know, breathing. And unfortunately, as it also happened last night, as the last couple of days or evenings, as the night wears on, the pain / discomfort starts to get worse. So yeah, I am recording this podcast. A little bit of discomfort here. I can't start taking my go to sleep med just yet because then I'll start dozing off during the podcast, and we can't have that on the podcast, can we, Dan? ow. Also, laughing, not a good idea for me, so hopefully there's nothing funny on this podcast.
Yeah, I was going to joke about, like, if there was a Mad Men episode where Bobby Draper fell off his bike, that's how I visualize you, but I guess that didn't actually happen, so I won't make that joke.
No, this, all I can say is that this was remarkably serious. you know, and I'm all about joking about stuff, you know, I'm all about the dark humor as well, of course. But I've gotten into, I mean, since I was a teenager, I've had accidents on a bicycle, most of the time being hit by a car, quite frankly. And the running gag predominantly for the last 30, 40 years was, I'm always fine. I mean, I might get some scrapes, some bumps and bruises, and it's usually the bike that gets partially or mostly totaled. This time, bike is fine. Brand new bike still pretty much looks brand new. Scott is not fine. Scott's in trouble. Scott's going the summer of Scott is going to be horrible so far. So, you know, whatever. I love that I just bought a new mattress and I can't even sleep in my own bed now because it's impossible to sleep on. I'm sleeping in chairs and trying to sleep on the couch as much as possible when I can. It's been a bad existence for a few days. So, and hopefully within a couple of weeks that will stop. You know, rumor has it this could heal within 6 weeks. That's what I'm hoping. But I'm a person who had foot surgery back in October, and we saw how that didn't exactly heal very fast. That still hasn't finished healing. So I'm a little worried about things. But, okay.
I slept in your couch once, right? Is it the same couch?
It should be the same couch, yeah. Yes. Oh, I like the couch. I mean, I do. Under normal circumstances, I like sleeping on the couch. And even though I like it, it's just, it's the whole, I like it, except when you actually have to get up, you can't. You need you need someone else there to help you get up. And since I live alone, well, that's a problem. So basically I spend about 10 to 15 minutes trying to get out of bed, and I look like when a bug or a turtle, like a turtle has been flipped over on its shell and its back and it's trying to get up and it can't. That's basically me, and just add some little screams of pain while you're at it. Okay. So, all right. Got that out of the way. Took a little bit longer with it. I apologize, but, we obviously, as a result of all this, I had to delay the recording of our, and I, you know what? It was funny. All week I kept in my mind referring to it as a Thor podcast instead of a Loki podcast, which I don't know why that's been happening, but I keep saying Thor instead of Loki. I just caught myself before I was about to say it right now. I don't know why that is, but,
it'd be interesting.
What?
If Thor showed up, I don't think we gave any consideration the thought that maybe like Thor would show up. I mean, you know, but it would make sense, you know, to have at least a Thor cameo at the end or something.
I could see that, and maybe some certain, especially if it's like any one of a million alternate realities or something along those lines. Yeah. You know, it would make some sense if nothing else.
Yeah, but Thor. Yeah, I guess Thor thinks Loki is dead, and who knows what time period this is at or anything. So
right, that's all. It's all flibbity jibbity at this point.
Yeah.
Which reminds me. I actually don't know why that reminds me, but I'm going to say it anyway. Before we get into the most recent episode, I should mention that earlier this week, pre-accident, pre-horrific pain and discomfort, I was contacted by Jason. You know, as our occasional STVD co-host over the years, you know, fellow comic book geek like the two of us. So he... Oh,
Silver Fox. Really, yes. Nice silver handle.
I already know someone that I've known for... I know a lot longer than Jason, who I've referred to since the early 90s as Silver Fox. I can't really change it to another person, but I know who you're talking about.
Because he took care over the dairy department where he worked once. So we could just call him Cow King. You probably don't, you're not from Wisconsin. You probably don't have any other friends named Cow King. So
yeah, I guess call him the Silver Cow. He wanted to correct a few of my apparent gaffes from, I guess, the very first podcast. The first one, I'll tell you right now, I don't really care that I screwed this up, but apparently I must have referenced Rush Hour one or more times when I was discussing Owen Wilson, when I clearly must have meant the other buddy cop movie vehicle with Jackie Chan, which is Shanghai Moon and Shanghai Nights. And I think they're going to do another one for some reason. So, you know, my apologies to Jackie Chan fans that I screwed up and I said Rush Hour instead of Shanghai, whatever, but that was my mistake. The more pertinent mistake, and because this also pertains to a conversation I was having with you on the podcast, I think there's a certain point where I had referenced Secret Wars when we were talking about possible hints about future projects coming down the MCU assembly line and what you're looking for, Easter eggs and Loki, whatever. And in fact, the one that's actually on the docket to go into production at some point, maybe even later this year, in fact, it's Secret Invasion. So I think that my mistake was saying Secret Wars when I meant to say Secret Invasion. And then we ended up going down that rabbit hole of Secret Wars. That's on me. I totally made that mistake. So I do think Jason's right about that. I will say, you know, just the way I think DC likes to add the word crisis to just about everything, and it just makes it all kind of confusing. I think Marvel must have done that with the word secret. They just kept adding secret to everything, and I'm like, I don't know. You know, which
I don't know, they've only had a couple of storylines like that. So,
right,
I
mean, don't ruin the joke, you goddamn freaking... Anyway, so... ow! Okay, it's going to be that kind of a podcast. So, anyways, that's my mistake. I'm sure there'll be a few more this week, so maybe I should put on my own protective gear here. You know what, let's dive into the latest episode, which it feels like I watched a year ago now. Oh, good. I'm complaining about everything. So how appropriate the title of the episode was, Lamentous. I guess we should maybe just get it out of the way. We should mention how that's actually originally from the comic books, because I know some folks like that kind of stuff. I think it was about 14, and Jason, feel free to correct me, you know, later this week with this. About 14 years ago or so, there was like a storyline in Marvel Comics called Annihilation Conquest. And I think that is mainly where we learned about this planet Lamentous, which was located, I think, on the outskirts of Kree space, right?
It wasn't notable in that storyline. I read that and I have all the comics, but, you know, just one of like a zillion planets that was dealing with this stuff, so.
And just for people who aren't big Marvel fans, you know, the Kree are one of those major alien races that's pretty much played a major part in the Marvel universe for several decades now. You know, they're always warring with the Skrulls and so on. We would need like three podcasts just to talk about them, so we won't. And I believe what pertains to this episode and the connection is in one alt, and again, I use the phrase alternate reality correctly, apparently. In one alternate reality, which I think was the alternate reality of Earth, you know, 199999 or something like that, the planet Lamentous had a habitable moon where most of its population was located, but the planet starts to break apart and the fractured planet pieces, you know, basically destroy the moon and kill everyone. And that's the apocalyptic event that they're using in this episode of Loki. So that's where they kind of, you know, took it from the comic, so to speak. Is there more significance to it than that? I personally don't think so. I think they just said, hey, that's a good idea. That's a cool idea. Let's use that, you know, but I, you know, of
course. Yeah. It's attention to detail, but I don't think it's like specifically relevant or like an Easter egg it's just an Easter egg. It's just like, okay, we're paying attention to the comics and, you know, just throwing in this, you know, using an actual planet that was, you know, whatever.
Yeah. That's exactly the way I took it. So, and like I said, hey, if I, you know, and even with Dan here, you know, because Dan will be my first filter for getting anything wrong, but, you know, feel free to back him up, Jason. Just kidding.
Yes,
Jason, I love to correct people, so I'm not actually mad. You did the right thing. Okay, so back to the actual episode. This episode, you know what? I would say this episode was fairly straightforward and really, and also clearly on the briefer side as far as the first three were concerned. I mean, you can really nutshell it, you know, like, you know, plot-wise like that. You know, Loki and the Variants, who insists on being called Sylvie, they end up trapped on that planet, Lamentous, after they fight each other back at TVA headquarters. They end up forming a more than uneasy and kind of trust-lacking alliance in hopes of getting, you know, that transporting Tempad to work, because they need to find a suitable power source on this about-to-be-destroyed world here. You even get a little bit of a kind of a Snowpiercer vibe as they finagle their way to get on board a train that's going to get them to where they need to go until the Tempad is pretty much destroyed en route. So at this point, you know, it's either die or figure out a way to save the Ark that is supposed to be destroyed in the coming cataclysm. You know, it's basically on the brink of happening by the end of this episode. But even with all, you know, and there's a lot of fun and there's a little bit, bits of action here and there, but I kind of felt this episode was really, at least in my opinion, was really more about the development of these two characters than anything as far as really pushing the real storyline of Loki further, which I have no problem with whatsoever, even though it's a limited series, but I did want to find out and get as much info and insight into this new character, Sylvie, as possible. Because the problem is always with all these TV shows is when you have a thing where, oh, they might die, and you're like, well, no, because the stakes are about as high as the first hour of I don't know, a James Bond movie or something. Because you know you're not going to kill them, so we're just really going to be learning about them instead. You know?
Yeah.
So and again, I don't have any problem with that. I mean, I know in the Twitterverse and whatever, there were some people that were down on this episode. I'm not saying it was like the best of the three. It wasn't, but it was certainly enjoyable and engaging. At least I felt that way.
Well, these episodes of this kind of episode, I mean, it's not really, I don't know, you know, it's kind of like a bottle episode of a different kind of show where they're just like, they take the time for a couple characters just to like hang out, maybe learn a little bit more about each other instead of like having a bunch of, you know, even though there was some crazy stuff going on, but it was just kind of more of that kind of thing. And I think this kind of show really, really needs that, or else it just ends up being like, you know, too much, you know, style without enough substance.
Right. I mean, I minus the use of the word bottle, I agree with everything you just said. Exactly how I felt about it. I only say that because I actually went to the trouble of, I did a Jason and I corrected someone on Twitter because they were using the phrase bottles. It's like, you know, I know what you're trying to say and you're right in what you're trying to say, but please don't call it a bottle episode because I know, you know, I don't mean you, Dan. I'm just the other person because, you know, bottle episode is like the cheap episodes, they're all in one set kind of a thing.
That's the kind of stuff like that you, every now and then you would get like a really good character episode because they did that. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. From All in the Family right up through the show we're talking about right now. Well, actually, one of the things I did kind of enjoy about it, just it reminds me of when we were talking about the first episode, and it was something you pointed out. Something that you really loved about the set design or the art direction, I should say, of the show. And I think it was when they looked out the window and the way they imagined the cityscape, which had that certain look to it, which wasn't some, you know, CGI thing out of the Phantom Menace, you know, futuristic city. It had more of that old 50s sci-fi drawing kind of quality to it, right? Painting, right, exactly, which I agree. I thought that was great. In a similar vein, I kind of just liked seeing what the creatives imagined for the different parts and aspects of this planet, Lamentis, and where they were, and the different terrain that they were on, and the different, you know, everything like from when they go to that one woman's shack, the woman who's deciding she's not going to try to leave the planet, she's just going to stay there, or the way they visualized, you know, the moon or planet in the air breaking apart and descending upon the to the surface on the horizon. I just really loved that because it gives the creative mind a kind of a spin. It's just and it gives me something that, I mean, I don't watch a ton of sci-fi TV that's outer space that's like this, you know, outside of your Trek shows and whatnot. So I just like the fact of being able to see something different. It was like, oh, that's kind of fresh, and you know, they're clearly, once again, they're spending money. Thank you, Disney. You know, so I kind of enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, and I kind of like there. You know, there was a couple times during the episode where I was just like, you know, like the scene with the lady that's just gonna like hang out in the cabin while it all like goes to hell. Mm-hmm. It kind of felt like it ended kind of abruptly, but like now that like the episode, like, you know, they're still stuck on this planet, so I'm assuming she'll be back in the next episode and they'll pay that off and stuff like that, maybe, or they'll just leave it like that. But yeah.
I like, Yeah, I mean, I would be a little surprised if they came back to her, but I wouldn't mind it. But what I liked about that, in a weird way, it kind of reminds me of something that might have been on a random episode of, say, like The Mandalorian or something, because there's something very Wild West feeling about that. You know, a lot of this had that kind of feeling to it until they get to that one weird cityscape where it's kind of like, okay, now it's like Times Square in Japan and Chinatown all mushed into one, you know, neon Vegas kind of insanity kind of a thing. You know, the only thing I need to hear is like, oh, we're going to Colorado now, but that's a wrong TV show. Cause basically whenever someone has, when there's apocalypse, you have to always go to Colorado apparently. What was I going to say? But the thing I think to me, beyond the little tidbits like that, again, it was about the characters, and it's really more finding out about her, about this woman calling herself Sylvie. And so I thought maybe, you know, let's look at what we learned about her, what theories we might end up having about her, and what her ultimate plan might be. And like I said, I mentioned, you know, looking a little bit on Twitter on, cause I actually watched this episode early on Wednesday, so I didn't mind I didn't want to read any articles about it, but I did happen to go on Twitter for something else, and then, you know, I saw it was trending, so I read some tweets, and I was like, and I was perplexed by some of the negative reactions to her character. So I didn't really understand that. I read some of them, and I realized, reading people on Twitter is almost like reading YouTube comments. You shouldn't really be bothered. Because what I really like about her is, you know, much like, say, Loki's own gender identity, I think her own character is somewhat fluid. In the sense that up until now, she's kind of been set up as the villain. But, you know, she's also a character that maybe we're going to find more empathy for her as we move on. You know, and maybe it really these timekeepers might really be seen as the true villains, depending. I like the fact that at this point in the show, they can go a number of different ways, and we're not too sure about our footing. It's like, okay, who are the bad guys? Are there any bad guys, or are they all bad guys? And it's really hard to say, because you have a series which is already built around a character who has always legitimately been one of the biggest villains in the Marvel Universe. So you're already, that's your starting point of, you know, the other characters you're kind of feeling initial sympathy for. You always have to remember, oh yeah, you know, he's like a big time villain. He's responsible for the deaths of countless people and creatures, I'm sure. But, you know, we enjoy Hiddleston so much, and he's been one of the best parts of the MCU. But I don't know if the fact that he has had some somewhat redemptive moments here and there really erase the fact that, yeah, at the end of the day, he's always been a villain. I don't know if they're really trying to rehabilitate him here or not. I think they're going to have their cake and eat it too. I don't know how you feel about that, Dan.
Well, they kind of already like rehabilitated him, but that isn't him. This is like a past version of him. So this character hasn't like, you know, redeemed himself yet. He's still just, you know, done douchey stuff and hasn't like,
right,
you know, went to the character arc where he's going to like sacrifice himself, getting killed by Thanos or whatever.
So. Right, right. You're exactly right. Because this Loki, as far as he knows, he's the Loki he's only gotten as far as the first Avengers movie. So he hasn't done the things that came in those later movies, which make, you know, especially like in Thor Ragnarok or whatever, where you go, oh, okay. And even trying to take on Thanos in his last minutes on, well, not on Earth, but in existence, I should say.
Even though I like Hiddleston, and I thought it was cool that Loki, you know, became, you know, less villainous as time went on. But I think it'd be kind of nice if they just had him end up as a, you know, still being a bad guy at this, you know, maybe they'll just, you know, everybody will kind of like assume that he's going to go through some kind of redemptive arc or something. And at the end, like if they didn't do that and he was like the actual, like still a bastard at that point, I think it'd be really cool to do that. They probably won't do that because they're going to want just like have people, you know, liking their Loki. But I think it'd be really interesting if they did that just because, I mean, you know, just that's kind of how it feels. It's going, but
well,
you know, he'll end up, you know, learning from some of his ways and stuff like that. But
I think they've actually created a nice little way around a lot of that, because I think the overriding concept that they've introduced from the get-go here is there are many Lokis. So I think that'll be how they were. It's like, well, you're going to run into Lokis over the course of any future movies or TV shows. Like, oh, you might get a nice one. You might get a nasty one. It's kind of ridiculous, but I kind of think it's something along those lines, if nothing else, but we'll see.
And I like the new character, even though I think it's dumb that they're using like Sylvie Enchantress instead of classic Amara Enchantress, who was around forever. But I mean, that's clearly what they're doing. They pretty much hit us over the head with constant references to enchanting multiple times during the episode. So, I mean, it's fine. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, I don't mind if they use newer stuff, but I would be fine with them using old
school.
Well,
as far as that, I mean, they're still. I could not say that we're clear on whether she's a straight up version or an amalgam of versions. You know, I know they used that. You're right. They're hitting us over the head with the word, use of the word enchant over and over. But again, this might be a case of where they're going overboard with their winking at this, that, and the other thing. But at the same point in time, she could still, at the end of the day, just simply be a female version of Loki, who just happens to take that name and happens to have the power of enchanting. And yes, when I say just happens to have, that's me saying I don't really believe that either.
Yeah, and it makes sense for them not to use the classic version of Enchantress, because that's an Asgardian, so Loki would already know her, because there's like, you know, 800 Asgardians or whatever. So right. just like he knows, like, you know, Enchantress is like usual, like partner in crime, Scourgey the Executioner, who was, you know, played by Carl Urban in the last Thor movie. You know, so like, of course, you know, he knows him, but, you know, if it was the one from the comics, the classic comics, I mean, that's just an Asgardian character. So this would make more sense for like somebody that Loki has to get to know.
Right. Exactly. Now, I'll say about her, I mean, well, first of all, I am enjoying the work of the actress. The actress is Sophia DiMartino. The phrase I like to use when I watch shows like this, I think she holds the screen very well on her own. There is some difference of opinion, whether or not people feel she has chemistry with Hiddleston or not. I personally, if you're asking me, does she have as much chemistry as, say, Owen Wilson with him? No, probably not that much, but I think she's fine with him. I think the key thing, and this is where I would agree, if there was anything negative to say, I don't know if this is a real criticism or not, I think there's at least one moment where they try to play up some sort of sexual tension between the two. Not putting aside how creepily narcissistic it would actually be, because you know you're still supposed to be another version of Loki. I wasn't really, as I say, feeling it, but because they didn't spend that much time on it, I was like, okay, you had your little bit, and then we're moving on. This isn't going to be a thing. So I'm fine with it. You're not forcing it on us, because you and I, we've watched a number of shows over the years where you took two characters who just did not really click together, and then you made us like watch them for like a couple seasons, you know, Game of Thrones, and But putting that moment aside, I just like the way they bounced off each other. I mean, she has got that eye rolling thing down pat. You know, she could be on a TGIF sitcom, the way she rolls her eyes, whatever. But, I thought the scene that, and it was funny, cause someone online again pointed out this, oh, I hated this scene. I was like, what's wrong with you? It was a good scene. I really enjoyed the scene early in the episode where they show her trying to get that information about the timekeepers from the TVA cop that she had snatched. Because I just love the fact it was something really insidious about the way they were doing it. I really like that. I was enjoying that a lot. You know, especially because, you know, yeah. you go on. I'm sorry. I thought you were going
to
say something.
Oh, I'm just like, it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of similar to like the ways of like, you know, Agatha's kind of doing some like, you know, funky shit going on in the WandaVision show. So maybe like, you know, these characters, like, those characters, like, you know, witch powers, like, are derived from the same Source or something like that too, just because it's kind of just like a, you know, just similar, you know, like the mind games and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I was that, in fact, I am so happy you said that, because one of the things I was thinking with her and what she's doing here, there's a certain parallel to the Agatha or Agatha Harkness character, as we saw in WandaVision. Maybe she's not as funny an actress, because Catherine Hahn is a great comic actress, but that's okay, because she gets to be funny with Hiddleston, whereas Elizabeth Olsen, not really all that funny in WandaVision, let's face it. Anyway, but I just like that we're throughout the episode, and there's a certain point, I think Loki even makes a comment about it to her. Because I said that, there's a chance for us to learn more about her, but it's like she's using every moment to find out more about him instead. So we keep scratching even further and further more at the Loki character, even more. And we get little bits about her, but she still remains somewhat mysterious, which I think is important for her and the overall plot of what she's actually up to. But I like the fact that we're getting, you know, little bits more about him. Oh, by the way, because I know I'll forget it if I don't mention it now. My favorite little thing in the entire episode, I don't know why, but my favorite, I only wrote down three things the entire time I watched this episode. I believe this was one of them, because I don't have that piece of paper anywhere, but I remember writing this down. I love the moment when Loki says he doesn't like to ride backward on trains. That was I don't know why. It's also because I also don't like to ride backward on trains. Maybe that's it. Although, I mean, if I have to, I will. It's not like I don't have OCD about it. But I just love the fact that this is a god, you know, and the god of whatever. And like that bothered him. And the fact that she took the seat that he would normally want, and I've had that happen a million times, whatever. And, you know, because I don't like to ride backward on a train. It's like, okay, I love that, because that's the child in Loki, I think. And she's always present with him, because, you know, which makes sense because of the type of god that he is. That was, for some reason, I don't know why, that was my favorite thing in the entire episode.
Huh, nice. I kind of got the impression as I get closer to the end that, like, you know, Loki's kind of like actually running some kind of a big con on her. Like when he broke the time pad, he just seemed like he was being so bumbling and inept. I got the impression that he was just like running this freaking scheme, trying to like get more information from her. So I think at this point, I think he like has the upper hand and probably like has a functional time device and is just like, you know, fucking with her.
See, that is a workable theory. The flip of it, however, is she enchanting Loki throughout this episode?
Yep. Because her initial enchantment of him also could have worked the entire time, and you know, it's all going on like that.
Right. Because, like what I was saying before, throughout the episode, we're finding out and getting more insight about him than her, which would make sense if she's pulling a scam on him and also showing his, you know, fallibilities and weaknesses, whatever. Oh, by the way, well, other thing I really loved, there is that one moment later on towards the end of the episode where Loki actually gets to bust out some real freaking power. And I was like, oh yeah, look, I forgot Loki can really do stuff. He's not just, you know, a magician. He can, when that giant thing was about to fall on top of them or something, and he kind of like holds it up. Just mentioning, because it's kind of cool.
His hand-to-hand combat skills too, because we haven't got to see much of that for a while either.
Right. I know. I did enjoy that. We did get a little bit of that here, but I think one of the big things about the series moving forward, I mean, we have been told, although we have about an unreliable narrator, if you want to call it that, as possible in a show like Loki, but he has said his plan is essentially to overthrow the timekeepers and take control of the TVA. But we still don't know what her plan is. We don't know if it's just simply to kill them and then what? Just go off into the cosmos somewhere? The thing is, she does make a point early on of saying that this is what she's doing. This is something that she's been planning. I think she even said she's been planning this for years. If you're planning this for years, it can't just be, oh, I just need to get to the timekeepers and kill them. I just feel like there's gotta be more to it than that. So it's interesting to try to figure out what is her true plan, you know?
Right.
And I think that as far as the biggest thing in, to me at least, and I think to, oh, I think to most viewers, I think the biggest reveal in the entire episode was the one that we get about the TVA. That all these personnel, I mean, I guess essentially mainly like, you know, the hunters or, and even Mobius himself, that they were not simply created by the timekeepers that maintain the sacred timeline, as we were told, but many, if not all of them, were in fact variants themselves at one time, and that they were reset and converted into these, you know, drones and worker bees that are working for the TVA. I thought that was very interesting and very, and it also adds a bit of almost a tragic nature to those characters. Like, you know, we're gonna have to have that scene with Mobius now, and that's probably gonna fill in the blank about how he keeps talking about jet skis or something, because maybe from his past, maybe he was a jet ski instructor. Who the hell knows? But I just thought that was really a very interesting little bit of information they dropped in this episode.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So, of course, they'll pay it off at some point in the next couple episodes, but it'll be interesting to see exactly what they're doing and what kind of consequences it has, because I imagine some of the DVA people might not be super into that.
Right. I think the thing I was trying to figure out, and I probably might have been able to determine this if I went back and rewatched it, but I didn't. So if this is more confirmed or strongly implied in the episode than I'm remembering, I apologize because again, I didn't rewatch it. I don't know if what she was saying indicated that that was the case with, excuse me, everyone at the TVA or only some of them. And I know if it's everyone, which would be on one hand be more interesting, but then someone would say, well, it can't be everyone because then you'd have like a chicken and the egg kind of a situation because you'd have to have a TVA before you made them into a TVA. But part of me thinks would say, no, it's the fact that there's a paradox there, which is what makes it work for me. You know, so I kind of like the idea. Anyway, that's just, I'm just spitballing there. Right. And again, and I think that's also going to lead to other questions. Because these variants that got reset and were set to work for the TVA, were they variants that were from, I think they, in that initial, little video that we saw with Miss Minutes back in episode one, were they variants from that first multiversal war that was described way back when? Or are these variants that have been just spanning the millennia that keep being reset, kind of like the Loki situation right now? I mean, again, I just have a lot, it opens up a lot of questions and I'm very curious about it. And I suspect we're going to run into one of the characters that we've met already, I think is going to know. It might be
Right.
the first, my guess would be the one who's the superior to Mobius,
Yeah.
Ravenna. I suspect she knows that she's,
Yeah.
that would make sense to me, but I could be wrong.
And it'll be interesting to see just, if we see these characters realize that they've been lied to. I mean, will a good portion of them just keep on keeping on, because the organization's kind of like a faith-based thing. I mean, they treat it almost like a religion with the sacred timeline and all this and stuff. And as we've seen in reality, when people realize that their religion is like stupid bullshit and they've been conned, they go all in anyway, because that's what they do.
Oh, that's going to be very interesting when I talk about a different TV show at the end of the podcast now. And actually, and factoring into something else that occurs to me, again, these thoughts just come to me as I'm thinking about the show a little, which, and again, love when a show can do that. Let me see how I can say this. They, again, like I said earlier, when we were talking about, you know, between Loki and the Sylvie character, they've established early on, first episode, about the idea there being multiple Lokis. You know, we see those drawings or depictions of all the different types of Loki. Oh, there's a hokey looking Loki. There's this kind of look, whatever. So they established that. That's number one. Number two, this again, the Hunter per character, Hunter B20, that's one thing, because they all seem to be rather hard asses, whatever. But the judge being really dead set against him, it makes me, and if she has additional insight into what the real truth is behind the TVA, I kind of feel like we may be encountering more Lokis here who have multiple, I don't know if it'll be Hiddleston in multiple roles or just different creature versions of him, whatever. But I wonder if the way the timeline has been screwed around with in the past, whatever, even if it's been straightened out, I wonder if Lokis have always been part of this, you know, or could they go crazy and like, look, the timekeepers are not, they're not lizards, they're Lokis, you know, or something like crazy like that. I feel like I'm being set up for like a wacky being John Malkovich insanity moment on this show. I could be wrong, but I kind of feel as where they might be headed here.
Yeah, and by doing so, it'll be kind of like a nice tease to like the potential shenanigans that they can do in like, you know, the upcoming Spider-Man and Doctor Strange movies, as they kind of like explore all these different versions of characters and stuff like that. So doing that and using like, you know, it'd be really cool if they had like, you know, just Hiddleston playing like a Hulk and like, you know, all this other stuff. It'd be fun if they do that.
Yes.
And I'm sure he'd be down with it.
So, absolutely. I
guess we'll see if it's a-
Absolutely, and you're right, and that is something we should be looking at, is especially when I look at what the next couple Marvel movies are that are being slated, which, you know, obviously Black Widow's finally going to come out, and that's been delayed for like over a year now, and we know that's more of a backstory kind of a thing, because, you know, she's dead. And then I know there's the Shang-Chi movie, which comes out in September, which I guess will factor into the, you know, overall thing. I don't know how big a part it's going to play in the more cosmic aspect of what they're doing. But I don't really have that much insight into that movie, so I don't. They might, but I feel like a lot of what we're going to get into, as far as what you just said, Spider-Man and the Doctor Strange thing, Loki feels like it might be a good springboard for that, because stuff that they were kind of throwing at us in WandaVision, they've already kind of been talking about in this, you know, with the Nexus events, with timelines, whatever, and with the little things that we already have heard about the Spider-Man movie, it feels like, you know, they're continuing to build a foundation for what's going to happen in those, specifically those two movies. The Spider-Man one and the Doctor Strange one, and maybe that really will change the landscape of the MCU from that point on. And the ripples of that will affect everything that comes after, whether it be the Thor Love and Thunder or all the other movies that are coming down the pike. I don't know. That's just spitballing here.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, they've done a fairly good job executing on a lot of these concepts and stuff that they've been working on. So hopefully they'll manage to continue to do it, you know, and they definitely seem to be, you know, continuing to make good effort on these, you know, they're not just kind of resting on their laurels or whatever and stuff. So hopefully they can continue to do well, but yeah. It'd be nice if they just have some attention to detail and have some, you know, people, you know, checking out, making sure the scripts aren't filled with a bunch of stupid holes and stuff and take the time to do some fun stuff. Like, it would be amazing if like Tom Hiddleston played a Hulk Loki who like just beat the fuck out of this Loki like a ragdoll, which would be really funny, because it hasn't been that long since Loki got his ass kicked by the Hulk in that way. So it'd be really funny if he got beaten up in the exact same way by a Hulk version of himself.
If only to give Tom Hiddleston the opportunity to say the phrase "puny god." Yeah, I'll go for that. And yeah, and I totally agree about what they've been doing. You know, I will even forgive them, you know, things like, you know, the Falcon and the Wooden Soldier being a piece of crap and whatever. Had to get that in there. Sorry.
I see people saying that they liked it a lot, and, you know, I mean, I like the actors. I don't even dislike Sebastian Stan anymore, but it was a boring fucking show. It just was lame. And, you know, I was just, and the Captain America movies are my favorite of all those Marvel movies. They just couldn't, you know,
What shocks me about it. It shocks me about how much I didn't like it, because of I think the Captain America string of movies by far are the best out of the MCU. By far. I mean, just Winter Soldier alone is just, you know, fantastic. The first one's great. The Civil War, the third one? Civil War? Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
What I wish could have been done, and, you know, I think they were just busy. They have other things they were doing and couldn't really be dealing with this TV show, whatever. I kind of wish the guys who had headed up those movies had headed up the series. It wasn't them. And, you know, I appreciate those people who are fans of it, who like what they did, you know, good for you. I disagree. And I had a friendly argument a couple of weeks ago about it with a fellow comic book geek in a bar one night. And I was going off on, I think I was going off on the whole Sam giving the shield to the museum. And he was like, oh, but you know, but he real, and I was like, no, but he, I was like, I'm sorry. I still don't accept it. I know it's the foundation for the premise of your show. I just don't believe. I don't believe if you watch the end of Avengers Endgame, I don't believe a couple of weeks later he goes, yeah, I'm just going to give it to the Smithsonian. No, I'm
yeah.
And you know what? And I said, even if I can accept that, let's say, okay, he, for whatever reason, whether it's about the he can't live up to those ideals. He thinks America, can't see a person of color being, you know, taking the shield, whatever the reasons are. Let's say I go along with that. Let's say I say, okay, I'll buy that. But like what you just mentioned about Sebastian Stan, they totally blew it as far as doing anything remotely interesting with the Bucky character. It was so bad. Sorry. Makes me angry just thinking about it. He works with veterans, but he mocks the idea of therapy. That would be like the surgeon having a making fun of someone going to the doctor.
What? Well, it makes some sense just because, you know, he is from the 40s and like, you know, men are like, oh, you know, men. The prejudice of like,
oh,
you know,
I get that. He should feel that way. But Sam is that way. It doesn't make any sense for Sam to say that. It's like, no, you work. We established the first time we met you. You work with veterans who are suffering from, you know, PTSD and all the other stuff. You're the last person who would be anti-therapy.
Just a lot of poor, you know, execution and just like, you know, they're trying to do a lot of stuff. But I mean, I can understand why in like, you know, whatever the hell year this is, they're going to like, you know, focus on like, you know, just, they're just trying to do a lot of stuff. So of course, you know, they're going to have to deal with the racial stuff and you understand why they're doing it.
But
if you have this big, like, you know, Captain America style, like espionage plot, when you have like, you know, seven scenes an episode, like dealing with some, like, you know, $12,000 boat that nobody gives a fuck about except, you know, Sam, it's just kind of, I mean, it rips you out of the story. I mean, like, you know, just while, you know, the Flag Smashers are doing their, like, you know, poorly executed plot and whatever. And there's interesting concepts about, like, you know, what would happen if all these people came back into existence. It all made a lot of sense. They just didn't pay it off because they were trying to do 50 things at once. They should have, you know, did a Falcon show, did a Winter Soldier show dealing with the, you know, their specific issues and then do another freaking show where they team them up and decide which one's going to take the shield or something. And then, you know, really, I mean, they have, you know, I'm sure they could have had, they got the money to do it. They could have fucking done it if they wanted to.
I had no problem with the, I would have had no problem with them focusing, you know, a significant amount of time on, you know, Sam's life, not as the Falcon and what's been going on with his family and the thing with the boat, whatever. But it felt like you bring it up, you make it into an issue, and then you kind of piss it away, and then we'll just remember it later. Whatever. I don't even want to talk about it. It was just we're wasting time on our precious podcast talking about a show I didn't want a podcast about. So, you know, that other people wanted a podcast about it and they did that. They did a great job with it, I'm sure. I wouldn't know because I had no interest in listening to podcasts about a show I didn't like. So there you go. Anyway. But speaking of shows I do like, because I think we're finished. We've all that time talking about Falcon and the stupid snowman means that we can talk about something else, because we already finished Loki here, and we are in the winding minutes of this podcast. I want to keep up a thing I've been doing for the last few, where I mention a show that I've been watching or I have just finished watching the last week, and I was able to pull another one off. This has been a show that had been recommended to me by a couple of people over the last year or so, and I finally got a chance to check it out. It's a show called Evil. Probably one of my favorite names for a show of all time. I'll give it that. It was a show that I think the first season was originally broadcast on CBS, and now obviously it's become part of what was CBS All Access. Now it's Paramount Plus, whatever. And they just, kicked off season 2 on a weekly basis, I think just like a week ago, whatever. For anyone who hasn't seen the series, and that might be most of the people who are listening, just to sum it up, the actress, I'm probably going to mispronounce her name, Katja Herbers, she plays the lead character, Kristen Bouchard. Listeners, even if you can't pronounce her name like I can't, you will remember her. She was on season 3 of The Leftovers. She played Dr. Eden on that. And she was also throughout Westworld season 2. The character she played, I think her name was Emily or Emily Grace. She was the daughter of the Man in Black. So you've seen that actress before. The other people on the show you're probably even more familiar with, because you have Mike Coulter as the character David Acosta. People out there, you either know him from The Good Wife, or you know he's Luke Cage. And then you have Asif Manvi as Ben, and anyone who's watched The Daily Show over the last 20 years knows who that is. But the best thing, of course, is one of your central characters is Michael Emerson. Michael Emerson plays the character Lester Townsend. Let's just say he goes above and beyond his villainous antics on either The Practice or, of course, Lost. What is the show about? David Acosta, he's a priest in training who heads up essentially a 3-person team to suss out whether assignments dealing with things like possessions, miracles, and other supposed supernatural events are real or not. Your basic format, he's the believer, Bouchard is more the skeptical psychologist, Ben is the skeptical tech guy, and Leland Townsend, well, let's just say he's evil, and we're continuing to maybe learn about who or what he truly is. The show, it's created by the Kings, Robert and Michelle. They're the creative forces behind The Good Wife and The Good Fight, and even that show, the pre-Trump era show, Brain Dead, which was so right on the money. Considering the themes and some of the themes and scenes that we see in the show, I'm actually surprised, if not shocked, they were able to get this on the regular network. If anyone who's seen it, you probably know what I'm talking about. Don't want to spoil anything about it. I think that just says more about the power of the creative team of the Kings than anything else. I'm not going to say every episode or every scene is a home run, but man, the good really outweighs the eh on this series. There are some real moments of actual scares on the show, and they really get into some heady concepts and ideas. And look, at the end of the day, if you're going to watch it for just one thing, Michael Emerson is literally devilish fun. You got to watch him just for this. I mean, wow. After watching him in several episodes in a row, I was doing the thing where you go, wow, I wonder what villainous character I'd like to see him play in, like, you know, in like the DC universe or Marvel. But I think DC might lend itself more to some older guy like that. So I was trying to think.
He could be a good Batman villain.
I mean, if they hadn't already cast the Riddler, he would be a kind of good Riddler. He could be the ventriloquist. That would be kind of an interesting choice for that one. You know, he could be the, or you can go, he could be the toy man for super. There's so many possibilities with him.
It must be cool. You know, his character and person of interest was pretty restrained for, you know, 5 seasons, I believe. So that's, be able to see him kind of, you know, I mean, it's cool that he gets to not just be like, you know, that all the time. So, he must enjoy.
He is clearly, there are scenes he's clearly having so much fun. And that's one kind of like, he's like, oh, he is getting to have a remarkable amount of, because I just watched the most recent episode earlier today, and there are a couple. There's one specific scene. There's a couple scenes he has with the actress Christine Lottie, who also plays a recurring character on the show as well, and she's very good. He has lines. I kept thinking, oh man, when he got that script, he's like, I get to say this? Oh, this is going to be so much fun. He must just tear through this because like, oh my God, this is so much fun. And he actually has a connection with, the Kings because the woman who's actually his wife had played a very popular recurring character on The Good Wife. And I think she might have, I think she's also shown up on The Good Fight, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, she has. She showed up on The Good Fight as well. And I kept saying when I watch the shows, how has her husband not shown up on one of these shows yet? I don't understand. And now here he is basically playing someone like, who if he's not the devil, then he might as well be the devil on this show. He's really a lot of fun. And finally, I like they also do take chances on this series. I mean, they do some out and out homages to things, the obvious, like The Exorcist, because they actually deal with exorcisms on the show. And yes, there was at least one early episode where there's a guy getting out of a car or a cab and they went for that. They kind of played on the classic silhouette outside the house moment. But then you have another episode out of nowhere where it takes you a few minutes to realize, oh, good Lord, I think they're doing Get Out. They're doing a straight up version of Get Out in this episode, which comes out of nowhere and is like, oh, and was just I love when you have a level of maddening suspense where you're like, oh, someone has to help this poor guy kind of a thing. When you can pull off that kind of tension, especially on a TV show, especially now when I realize it was a network TV show, that's really saying something. So, I really like the series. It was much more unexpected than I expected it to be. That's a brilliant sentence right there. I like the fact I'm not really sure at times where they're going with it. So it's just, at the end of the day, it's very enjoyable. Definitely gets my seal of approval. You can find it on Paramount Plus. It's an easy binge. The first season, I guess they must have anticipated this, or it's a new model because CBS didn't make them do 22 episodes. They did a 13 episode first season, and I think that's going to be what their second season is going to be as well. I think. I'm not sure about that. It's really a worthwhile watch. They do a lot of fun stuff on it.
Well, that's cool. I'll have to check it out if I've got access to that. Platform, so that's cool. And you know, he's, you know, my favorite character. Emerson played my favorite character on Lost because, you know, I just like that kind of character when played by a skilled performer, you know, him or Garrick on Deep Space Nine or whatever. Just, you know, that kind of like character is just with the right actor is just gold. So it'd be nice to see him, what he's up to now.
Oh, yeah, it's just when you see him, you'd be like, oh, okay, this is what, and you know, there are moments that make you think of Ben Linus, and then you realize, oh no, he's Ben Linus on acid. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Yes.
All right then. Okay, I was able to make it through without screaming in pain. That's a good thing. So I think we should get to the wrapping up portion now, right? Yes.
Yeah, I think we got it all covered.
I think so too. So if you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. You can like the page and join the conversation about shows like Loki. Hey, and like Evil too. Hey, look at all these four letter shows. Lost. Anyway, you can find our podcast. What was that phrase that Colleen used months ago? You can find us where most folks find podcasts, from Spotify to Apple Podcasts and so on. Obviously, Apple Podcasts is also a place where you can rate and review us. I bet some of the other places you can do that as well. I don't care if you do or not. Do whatever you want. But better yet, you can find all 300, and this will be number 315, I think. So I'll say all 315 of our podcasts can be found at stvdpodcast.podbean.com. And finally, please, you follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at stvdpodcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Dan and I will be back next week to cover the latest episode of Loki. Unless I'm in another horrible accident, hopefully we'll get it to you a little bit sooner than we did this week. But hey, you know, it is what it is. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no more accidents. I'm tired of these fucking delays, so.
I'm sorry. I try. You know, it's been a hard year.
Put your knee pads on. You're gonna have to get some safety gear, and you're going to have to wear lots of it.
Again, knee pads or elbow pads would not have protected my ribs, and that's the thing that's the bad thing.
You could have a light jacket, that would have helped.
You know what I need? I need like, you know, the old timey umpires would wear that big thing in front of the big chest protector. That's essentially what apparently I need. Oh my god! I actually went there earlier today. Actually, it was the first time I've been outside. Actually, I walked over there, and oh, by the way, even with your ribs, when it's hot out and you're dealing with this injury, you still walk really slow. I walked all the way down there and I took pictures of the street where it happened. I'm just upset because these two young guys, shut up. I'm not in the mood for that.
I just didn't like these two young guys just like whizzing like right over that hole on bikes really fast and making you mad. That's all.
I'm saying the two good Samaritans helped me out and helped me get home and before I got into a car and got taken to the ER that night. And I wish I'd gotten their names and numbers, not just because to thank them again, you know, more profusely, but also I kind of wish I'd gotten the name and number of a few people there who were witnesses to what happened in case I wanted to take legal action against the city for this gigantic, you know, weird chunk missing out of the street. That is the, which is what was literally what was my pitfall there. And I was looking at how the lighting was and everything. I was like, oh, I could do this. But I think I would have a better case if I actually had a witness. And someone, told me, well, when you talk to a lawyer, they can track down those people for you. I was like, yeah, will they? I don't know if they will. I don't know. But it's not a movie. I don't know. Anyway, let me stop talking about it because I'm extending this podcast longer than I meant to. So, Dan, thank you for being patient and wait and being able to record tonight. And I look forward to recording with you later this week.
Yep, sounds good. I'll be down for another episode next week and probably the following week. And then after that, it'll get more complicated. So we'll see how it goes.
Things get complicated on our podcast. Sacre bleu, it's not possible. Anyway, good night, everybody.
Good night.